one of the all-time favorite shows.
"'Twas a few nights before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The girls of Because You Were Home were under a cover watching things all afright, because even at Christmas, you can't be guaranteed a silent night. So let us tell you all some tales of Christmas horror and gore while we all wait for Saint Nick to visit once more. You are listening to Because You're Home, our Christmas special episode 64.
What if we put a spin on Christmas, right? You know, look, like I was only thinking of this on Santa Claus is coming. You better watch out. But I know that it's happened a lot, but if you just really stop and think about it, this man watches you all year round.
Oh, yeah.
He sees you when you're sleeping.
Yep. When you're awake.
Yeah. He knows if you're being good or bad.
He's essentially Edward Cullen.
What's he sparkle in the daytime?
Like, doesn't Bella like wake up a few times and she's like, why are you here? And he's like, hey, babes.
I don't like Twilight.
You don't like what?
Twilight. I did it in a child's with like, Twilight.
Yeah.
That's where I cut my love of vampires off.
Yeah. And I 100% appreciate that. And I totally give it to you. Yeah.
But could you imagine like Santa Claus coming into your house, dropping stuff off? It's a break and an entrance only. Instead of taking stuff, he leaves you with stuff.
Yes.
This is something to look forward to. Really?
It is if you're not getting coal.
But in this economy.
Yeah. I do actually remember a guy getting
coal. Some people might actually like coal.
Yeah, somebody when we were younger in our estate got coal.
Nice.
Yeah, I do remember that. One of the girls' brothers.
I'd be like, I don't know about you, but I'm going to have a warm Christmas. I'll continue being a dick for the rest of the year. I'm all right. Me and Santa, we have ourselves a little deal.
Love it. My cats have decided to go fucking mental this morning, so there shall be some sleigh bells in the background.
I heard a little ching ching. Like, fucking Santa's behind you, Grace.
I hear those sleigh bells ringing and ting ting a ling ding ding. Oh, he's just after doing it there. That's great. That's great. Perfect timing.
You got your cats harmonizing with you in the background.
Yeah, so whenever you hear a tingle, it's Krampus. It's Krampus coming to town and we're all going to die.
Yeah, because if you make a promise to Krampus, he will come to collect.
He really will. He absolutely will. So this week we are looking at Christmas festive horrors. And we are also looking at a little bit of stories around Christmas. I'm going to talk about the creepy traditions around Christmas. We looked at some of them last year, but we'll do a bit of a refresher. There are only a couple of lines, don't worry. And then Emer is going to tell us a Christmas.
I'm going to drag out a story.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's a bit long. Sorry. But then I suppose we should crack down on our films now, Grace.
Yes.
What
was your first film?
So I watched two kind of polar opposites of films. One where it was like a modern film, Better Watch Out, which was bloody fantastic. And
oh, I've heard of this.
Oh, it was just I came in thinking, you know, it's going to be this and the other. Oh my gosh, no, turned everything on its head. Then I'd heard about this film so much, Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah.
And I was like, good old slasher for Christmas. But it's like, it goes into mental health issues.
It is actually.
But in the sense of they skirt over this poor guy's problems. Seriously. So it's Silent Night, Deadly Night. And the basic plot about this is that like on 1971, on Christmas Eve, a family heads to a nursing home to visit the catatonic grandfather of 5-year-old Billy and baby Ricky. While his parents go with the baby to discuss the treatment of the doctor in the office, Billy is left alone with Grandpa. Out of the blue, he awakens and tells Billy to be afraid of Santa Claus since he punishes those who are naughty. While driving back home, a killer posing as Santa Claus lures Billy's father to pull over his car on the road, and Billy witnesses the killer murdering his parents. A few years later, Billy and his brother are raised in an orphanage run by the tyrannical mother superior that believes that punishment is a better way to educate children. You know, good Catholic way.
Oh, the only way.
That is the only way. Yeah. So Sister Margaret feels that Billy needs psychological support, but the mother superior doesn't agree. In 1984, when Billy turns 18, Sister Margaret finds him a job in a toy store. On Christmas Eve, Billy's chief, Mr. Sims, asks Billy to replace the employee that plays Santa Claus for the clients and their children since he's injured. The Santa suit associated with the alcoholic drink trigger in his insanity, Billy begins a murderous rampage, punishing naughty people. So that's that in a nutshell, but really it's like, he's such a cute little, the child actor they had to play Billy was just adorable, this little five-year-old, and he's legit like, I don't want to see Santa. Like the grandpa, he's like not looking. And then when everyone goes, he like just grabs him by the arm. He's like, you need to be afraid of it, Santa. And he's like, were you good? And Billy, he's a real honest little kid. He's like, no, I wasn't good all year. And he's like, well, watch it. He's going to punish you. And this little kid is terrified. And then like, we see that this guy who is posing as Santa robbed a convenience store and shot the guy who owned it. Mm-hmm. And so like, when he's like, asking for them to stop, they're like, oh look, it's Santa wanting us to pull over, should we help him? And Billy's like, no, don't, it's Santa, he's gonna come to punish us. But like, they kind of open the crack a little bit to try and help him, and then he pulls a gun on them. So then they try to drive away and he shoots in, killing the dad, and then he like tries to sexually assault the mom. But
it's dark.
Yeah, but
and it's
like,
very, it's really frenzied. Like it's yes. A proper 80s slasher.
Yeah. Yeah, like really no holds barred. Like he cuts the mom's throat and then he's legit looking for the kids.
Yeah.
The baby's crying in the car. Billy has ran out to try and get some safety in the bushes. But like the killer is trying to get them, and then that's it. It just goes to like a few years later when they're in the orphanage. And I tell you, that Mother Superior is no, I'm going to show that I don't know that film, but Hills Are Alive with Sound of Music. Yeah, she's no nun from that, I tell you what. She is, like, she's like a proper nun, like real old school Catholic. And yeah, so she's like, there is one nun who keeps trying to say, like, he's drawing a picture of Santa Claus, like, but killing people. Mm-hmm. And of course she punishes him, but one of the other nuns is like, no, he needs to see a doctor. Like this just proves that it comes every Christmas. He freaks out when he sees Santa Claus, and some other spirit just like punishes him. And then when Santa Claus comes to visit, she's like, don't worry, I've punished him enough where he should know to be a good boy at Christmas. And he like freaks out when Santa Claus tries to get him on his lap and he punches Santa in the face.
Yeah.
So then it just takes a hard, Billy and his younger brother, Ricky, manage to be in the orphanage together. So they're around each other. So Ricky's like trying to defend Billy, going, oh, he's not crazy. He just, you know, no one seems to be like comforting them that Christmas is a horrific time, because that's the time not only did their parents die, but were killed.
Oh, no, murdered. But oh, Catholic, shove that down, deep down. Put it down. And what doesn't kill you will only make you stronger. Come on now.
Stronger to kill
walk it
others.
Off, bitch.
Yeah. So then we reach, it's Billy's 18, and then the nice nun is trying to get him a job, and he's like, oh, I don't want to take kids straight out of school. But then Billy comes in and he's like near 6 foot tall, muscles for days. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing in that orphanage? Bench pressing the younger kids? I don't know. But so anyway, he's like, I'll hire him. He's great. So he's working behind in the back of the store, and he's great. And they do this pure 80s montage of him like getting his job done and having some fun. And it's like, I was like, this is meant to be a horror film, right? Because it's such a cheesy song in the montage. And then he has like the hots for some girl who works there too. Next thing you know, it's like the man doesn't own a calendar, but boom, it's coming up to Christmas. And
bam.
Yeah, I'm like, this couldn't have been a surprise. This is how time moves. Forward. You know,
told me that this was actually part of the Friday the 13th universe. And especially with the whole kind of frenzied and the touch on, but we won't touch too much on the mental health, I'd go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Sense. Ironically, actually, though, this film was released at the same time as the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all quite, they all kind of have that underpinning, like.
Yeah. But the thing, and this actually betted in its first week, in the first week of release. And then the parents gave out shite, it bottomed out, and then like had to be pulled out of the cinemas after a few weeks. I have more to say about that later on. So basically, Billy's like freaking out because it's Christmas and his work is starting to slack a bit because he's like staring off into space. He's really not happy. Next thing you know, as I said earlier on, the Santa Claus injures himself, the guy playing him for the store. So Billy has to do it. And I'm kind of like... Did the nun not even say, oh, he freaks out around Christmas and hates Santa? No one mentions anything, and Billy can't seem to open his own gob to be like, I'm very traumatized by Santa Claus. So he freaks out. Some girl is like, won't settle on his lap. He's like, you have to be good. You have to be good. Santa Claus is watching you. You have to be good. You have to be good, or else you won't get anything, or he'll punish you. So he's still, even though he's 18, he's still firmly believing that Santa Claus will punish those who are naughty. So then it's Christmas Eve. And oh yeah, so when Billy was in the suit, it was Christmas Eve. So he's still in the Santa suit. And then they lock the door. And then he's like, woohoo, it's over. This is the owner. And he's like, let's get hammered. And I'm like, that I can get on side. Yeah. So they have all this like whiskey and liquor out. And the guy who works in the storeroom with Billy gets the girl that he likes and like takes her into the back room. So after having like one drink, Billy's kind of like, he's moping around. He goes into the back room and it turns out that that guy was a bit too forward with the girl. And she was like, no, I don't want to have sex with you. And he's like, well, I do. And I'm going to have my way with you. So she's trying to fight him off and Billy strangles him. And then instead of being like saying thanks, because I suppose Billy may have taken it a step too far. She's like, you're crazy. So he gets like a box cutter and slits her all the way up her stomach and chest.
It's the slit. Mm-hmm. Terrifier did it as well.
Yeah. Just, yeah, he did.
I'm about to be crude, but can everybody stop doing the slit from the clit to the mouth, please? I prefer that doesn't happen in movies anymore, please.
Just because we have holes in both places doesn't mean that they need to be made into one big hole.
I can feel it.
Grace, I told you I'm slightly hungover and I've just, the porridge is dancing at the back of my throat right now.
Yeah, I get that. Like, I'm all for a dress when you buy it and you're like, slit to the clit. Like,
I'm not going to lie, this is my first time hearing this phrase.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. No, when you get this dress and there is a slit for days, slit to the clit. But when it's the other way around, I don't want that.
Yeah. Clit to the lips. I don't know. And that could just still be the same area.
I don't want to slip from the clip. Thanks.
No, no. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. 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 To it, not from it.
Yeah. 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 Let's go. Let's be festive hoes. I just don't want to be.
Like, not festive statistics.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So yeah, he cut open his present and he wasn't happy with the insides. So he then goes to move on and kills everyone inside the store. And then he just goes on this rampage of like, he goes to another house where this girl is babysitting. Of course, she's like making out with her boyfriend and all this. And he's like, he just kills him. He's like, punish. She's like in robot mode. He's not himself. Something is gone. He is clicked off. And yet the nun was trying to ring his place of work. And then they were like, oh, he's been Santa Claus. So she's like, oh, fuck, he's going to go insane. So she tries to go in and help him. She sees all the dead bodies. So at the same time, she's going to the police and saying, he's gone nuts, but we need to help him. It's not his fault. So she's there with cops trying to find a killer Santa. which on Christmas Eve, so many other people are dressed up as Santa. So,
oh yeah, so not easy.
Not easy. But he goes on a rampage. He kills that couple. But he goes up to the little girl who she was babysitting. I was like, were you good? And she goes, yeah. And you're like, were you really good? Yeah. Here's your gift. And he gives her, I think it's the box cutter with blood on it. Like, he gives her a knife and he's like, Merry Christmas. And then he kills two bullies. And then he's like, I think that even the nun knows he's going to come back and try and off the Mother Superior, because she's the one who always punished him. So I think he's like, I'm going to punish the Punisher. So yeah, he comes back to, like, at this stage, Mother Superior is very old. She's in a wheelchair now. And it was awful. They end up killing a Santa Claus because they think it's him, because he doesn't respond. It was a priest who dresses up as Santa for the orphanage, and he's deaf, so he couldn't hear them say stop or I'll shoot. Oh god.
Oh.
So they kill a priest in front of all the kids in the orphanage, but then lo and behold, they seem to have their ages all wrong. Some little kid lets in Billy and he's about to kill Mother Superior, but he kind of can't do it. And then he gets shot by a policeman and he's like, thanks for stopping me. I would have kept on going. And, you know, that's how it ends. But like, some little kid just looks at him and goes, punish. And that's how it ends. But like, the sequel is, I don't know if that kid was meant to be Ricky, who would have been the younger brother, but he should be.
No, he would have been way.
Yeah, he should be 13.
Yeah.
But so maybe that wasn't meant to be him, because I was like, oh, is it meant to be like It Runs in the Family? But no, because, but the sequel is, it's Ricky and he's grown up and he shares the same thoughts.
All I can hear is,
oh, punishment. So,
Ricky! Anyone from Ireland and the UK listening will understand the reference.
Oi, Ricky!
Ricky!
Anyway. So as I said with this film, that it initially bet Nightmare on Elm Street in the box office on the first week, but then it went down, and it went downhill because this annoyed parents to no end, because parents weren't happy to see Santa Claus depicted as an axe murderer. However, that was despite the fact that Tales from the Crypt in 1972 had done the exact same thing. And there was also another film called Christmas Evil in 1980, which, again, same thing. But I don't know whether this one.
I don't really get the relevance to that, though, because, yeah, OK, parents don't like it. But sorry, parents, are you showing your children this movie? Like, what?
Yeah, it's a horror movie. They should. Maybe they were just seeing posters or trailers on the TV, because it was a guy dressed as Santa doing the killing. And in the film, you have basically two killer Santas, one from the murder of his parents to now Billy being the murdering Santa. But basically, yeah, it got, after 2 weeks of just being out, it got pulled because just the sales plummeted. And also the film critics, Siskel and Ebert, they basically, Gene Siskel read out the names of the companies that own the distributor TriStar Pictures, and then said, shame on you. And himself and Roger had basically called out the writer, director and producer and said, you have nothing to be proud of. So they like, yeah, they were so not happy with this. In an interview from the documentary Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of Slasher Film 2006, which I really want to watch as a documentary.
Yeah.
And the actress who played Mother Superior had admitted it was a mistake to center the film's publicity campaign on Santa Claus and believed it would have generated far less controversy if the studio instead focused on Billy's psychological plight. Also in a story by People's Magazine, November 1984, the actor who played grown-up Billy said he felt so ashamed by the controversy, he told his friends and family to avoid seeing the film. However, he then reversed his stance years later when he attended the 30th anniversary screening and meeting with fans. And he has since made appearances at horror conventions and given interviews on the work of his films. So obviously, it's become a cult classic. And this is how I kind of...
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, and this is kind of how I came on to know it. It was basically just, it was on so many lists or stuff or articles for Christmas horror, and I was like, I kind of knew I was going to watch it eventually. And I have to say, like, I thought it was kind of funny as a film.
On
its premise, like, it's, and it's, yeah, it's it's like each kill is inventive. It's he gets his axe eventually, like, but there's like he puts a woman up on deer antlers, he strangles a guy with Christmas lights, he decapitates some kids going down a toboggan. Like, he is like coming up with a whole load of different kills, and that's what I like about your non-conventional slashers, when it's not just I have a knife.
Yes.
And it's when, because you find that in the earlier versions of Friday the 13th, from when we were watching them, obviously, because they're still fresh in my mind, that like in the beginning, Jason has so many different weapons. It's almost like he does it with a bow and arrow. He does it with barbed wire. Like, he has so many different things. It's just what he can find until he has his machete firmly established as his weapon. But yeah, no, I have to say, I kind of did like this film. I'd be curious to see, now they have so many sequels to this film, but I'd probably watch maybe just the next film to see what it's like with Ricky.
Yeah.
And then leave it at that, because I can't imagine, I'd imagine then after that you're really going off on a tangent to find who else can be attached to this. I don't know, maybe the third or fourth one, some other superior goes nuts. That maybe after, I would watch.
After the second one is when I step in. I will take these movies.
Well, yeah, we could do that maybe next Christmas, where we look at like horror franchises, if actually, they have any.
Yeah, that would be a great idea. That would be really good.
We missed out on a trick this year.
We did. But yeah, it gave us a chance to watch a couple of more of them. So yeah, because there's not too many. So actually, it might be a good idea to be able to do that next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it years ago. I can still remember I was in college with girls, and I think we were all in bed watching it. And I just know that we laughed through a lot of it.
Yes. So yeah. When, you know, like, it's the same with Terrifier. I actually love that film. I think
Terrifier is brilliant. The anthology movie it came from, muck. Didn't
yes,
like that at all.
I haven't watched that, but I just heard enough from it. And also, it was a different guy playing Art the Clown.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't wait to see the sequel, because I love it. Like, when he gets hurt because he doesn't speak and he gives a silent finger to someone because his finger got cut.
Oh, as well, when he's like, just the smiling and the,
It's awful. But I'm like, I would actually end up spending the night talking to that guy. I know.
You 100% would.
I get the weirdos would. On a night out. And yeah.
Yeah. No, genuinely, I for anyone who's listening, I can 100% agree with what you just said there.
Like, Art, show me your pictures. Oh, it's so cool.
How'd you do your makeup? It's lovely.
You have a matching suit. All right, let's go, buddy. I think we're going to paint the tent
red. What?
Yeah, it ended up being his accomplice.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll see him in October when we go to For Love of Heart.
Yes. That really sold it for me. I'm like, well, and I want him to be in full Art the Clown.
He will be. One of the days he's going to be there. So we'll make sure to go that day. And then the second I saw Tom Savini was there, I was just like, okay,
Jesus, yeah,
we need to go.
Yeah.
So, I think those tickets might need to be booked this week.
Actually, yeah, before they're gone.
I think that's a good idea. So my first movie is a movie that you've seen already, Emer. Mm-hmm. And I had actually seen this. Both of my movies this week come from Shudder, which I'm sure anybody who listens to this podcast knows about Shudder. It's an amazing streaming
it's
website.
It's just so good.
It's so good. And it's so handy to be able to actually get good horror available on a streaming site. And at the moment, they have like a full collection of Unhappy Holidays. So
nice.
That was also very handy. So thank you very much, Shudder, for that. So mine is called The Children. It is 2008. It was released. Director was Tom Shankland, and it was written by Paul Andrew Williams and Tom Shankland. So it's based in the UK. I've avoided this movie based on one image. And it was the image of two of the kids downstairs, and their faces just look bad. Like, it just looked like bad kind of makeup on it. So I just presumed it was a really kind of cheapy, bad horror.
It is cheap, but it's good.
It's brilliant. It's really, really good. I was really pleasantly surprised. One thing I loved about the movie as well was it was actually situated in somewhere, like, it was a family home. Do you know that kind of way? Mm-hmm. So they had at one stage, you see that they have a poster on the wall on how to tell time and stuff. It was actually like whoever did it, it was either their house or they had kids and they really went, yeah, these are the things you'd see, rather than some of the kind of like really high elevated like Hollywood movies where they're these real sterile houses. And, you know, there's not much personality. You knew that people lived there. You knew that what was, you know, it was a family, what was going on. So without giving anything away, the title and the kind of tagline for this movie gives it away enough for me to be able to talk about it. So it's called The Children. Mm-hmm. The tagline for this movie is, you brought them into the world, they'll take you out. So a relaxing Christmas vacation turns into a terrifying fight for survival as the children begin to turn on their parents. They basically get some sort of a virus and they go kind of bananas and a bit mad.
Just a bit.
Just a tad. So there's two different dynamics. There's two sisters come together and their families come together for the Christmas holidays. One travels down and is there with their two younger children and a older daughter from, I think it's a previous relationship, because she mentions that she doesn't call the guy dad. Either that or she's in her serious brooding kind of teenage phase where she's like, he's not my dad, even though he is. And she is played by one of the actresses who played the girlfriend in The Inbetweeners. So it was cool to see her. Mm-hmm. She's great. She's really good. Everything she wore, Emer, myself and yourself have worn.
Oh, yeah. Might still have.
When we were younger, I was kind of like, I'd like that outfit now. Yeah, just a really nice dynamic. They arrive. You can kind of tell that both sides are a bit like, oh, my sister has notions. It's quite funny. And then they arrive to the house of the sister who's there with her husband and their two children as well. And the kids are all delighted. It's in like the most idyllic kind of countryside, English countryside, this gorgeous cottage. There's snow everywhere, there's hills, they can go like sleighing and tobogganing. I think they're the same thing. They play loads of games, there's lots of food. The teenager, it's like being a teenager, she's raging because she couldn't go to a party. She turns around and she's like, I can't get any reception. The uncle's like, I can show you where there's reception. You think there's going to be a bit of a weird relationship going on there, but actually, do you know what's really refreshing? There wasn't. There wasn't. Yeah. It was just a normal family dynamic.
Yeah.
You were just like, finally, that's grand.
I can handle this if as long as there's no like creepiness in that sense. Yeah.
And it was kind of like, you know, it just, in so many movies, they would have done it. And now they do the whole thing of like, she obviously kind of has a thing for him because she's younger and he's older. Do you know, it has that kind of bit of it, but there's no weirdness. It's just kind of like this normal thing completely. Hmm. One of the wee boys that is traveling down feels sick. And the part where he is actually getting sick is such a perfect visual representation of how I vomit. I don't do it often. It has happened after the time that it was really bad was after a night out. Myself, Emer, Kerry and Warren and Niall went to see Ross from The Real Take, his band, on Halloween. We were in fancy dress, loving our lives. I was
Jesus. I remember that.
Yeah, I was on a severe diet just coming up to the wedding, and I think I had had a boiled egg and a tomato that day, and I imagine I hadn't had much else the days before, which is really bad. You should never do things.
It looked great. Didn't feel so great.
Didn't feel so great the next day. Honestly, like we were living the life. Like
we all had like a bottle of Prosecco each.
We had so much to drink. I can't drink it anymore. But the way he was heaving, he was like, and he's putting his hand out and he's like, "Mom." And I was like, that was literally me to Warren the next day. I was like,
crying in between retching.
Yeah. And just the thought of the next time you were going to get sick was making him cry. And I was like, buddy,
I'm there with you.
I've never had so much empathy for somebody in a movie as I did with that child right then. He's not well. Don't really know what it is that starts it. It then like zooms in on the sick and there's all these cell divisions and stuff like that. So you know that it's some sort of viral thing. The rest of the kids then get infected. It obviously only happens with a certain amount, a certain age, because the older girl doesn't get it. She's okay in the sense that she doesn't catch this killer rage. It's bleak. It's bleak. Yes. It is really good.
The Brits are good for a bleak film. I do like that.
Oh, like it's really, really good. It's that the bleakness is the whole thing of like, basically you need to decide, do I kill my niece and nephew who are so cute and like are also like cute as in they look cute and I love them, but also quite cute in the mind because they're all like, where's my mommy? And it's like, oh, they're still there. And then they're like, jab, jab, jab. So, you know, it's great. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It was actually nominated for the 2009 Fright Meter Award of Best Horror Movie, which I totally get. I thought it was really good. As I said, I totally tried to avoid this because of just one makeup choice. They tried to make the children look as sick as possible, but they look like you turned a black and white zombie movie into color. It just looked weird. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a load of bollocks. It was actually really, really good. I definitely recommend it. Casey, the teenager at one stage, she's rebellious, right? And she's trying to rebel. And she has a tattoo on her stomach. And it's so bizarre because it's like a little baby attaching to her belly button with wings. The uncle's like, what's the tattoo for? Now, I presumed it was going to be for infant loss. It wasn't. She was like, don't you know, I'm the abortion that got away. And I didn't think it was hit on enough in the movie, you know, for that to have been, there must have been some other line or some other part.
You know that there was a fight that she had with the parents and the mom had had enough and was like, I was almost going to get an abortion with you.
Yeah. And like, you know,
how else do you know that?
I imagine like there had to have been some sort of like thing cut out of the movie for it to make sense. But the cool thing about it is it's actually the cover art of the album. I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. But it's from the Icelandic band Sigur Rós, which I would enjoy. Yeah.
Let's go listen to that for Christmas.
I'll try. It's Agatis Bryden.
And is that easy to read? Because I find when they do the really like elongated letters and the harder to read, the more into death metal that they are. A lot of spikes with the letters. You know, if you can't read it, you're possibly listening to Norwegian death metal.
I would imagine that this is one of their nicer melodic tunes. It looks quite looks quite easy to pronounce, even though I can't do it.
That's your dipping your toe into death metal then for that one.
Exactly. So yeah, definitely a big thumbs up for me. The children, as I said, it's on Sigur Rós. It's on Shudder. Do you know, I came into this episode and I was like, I'm not going to say I'm so confident, I know what I'm doing, and I've said it 1,000 times as I say it right again. So yeah, 100% watch The Children. It's great. I really liked it, and yeah, big thumbs up from me.
I must rewatch it. Like I said, I watched that years ago and I just remember, you know, you remember enough about it where you're like, but I can't remember like how it ends or anything like that. But yeah, I might give that a go.
I also text my sister. She was texting us about last week's episode saying it was really nice to know that George Michael was now a producer. And I was like, yes, it's good. And then I told her I didn't want her to bring her kids home for Christmas. And I was also going to be texting my other sister to tell her the same.
Yes, please don't.
Really, stay safe, guys. And the fact that it was about a virus and kids, like, you know, getting sick and stuff, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, actually, this is a film anti-vaxxers shouldn't watch, because then they'll be like, because we're trying to get kids to get vaccinated now. So they're like, see, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, because there's a bit about vaccinations and stuff. It's all a bit mad. The kids are actually very cute, very screamy, very good. Very good.
Yeah, like, yeah, it is actually one of the things that they do
is like messed up. Like, a lot of it's messed up, but there's one thing in particular in the tent, and you're like, ugh. So yeah, definitely. Look, if you're a fan of killing kids, this one right up there.
We have an episode on killer kids. Like, so this is just, if you listen to that episode, then watch that. It's like a festive killer kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no. To continue absolutely. The children's spree.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it.
So the second film I watched was one of my more preferred two, even though I thought they were both good. This one was, for me, it was better. It was 2016's film, Better Watch Out, which I had seen like a trailer for it when I think it was coming out like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But I just never got around to watching it because I'm like, oh, it's very opening of Scream mixed with Home Alone. Yeah, if that was with men. And it's like, we've all been, as girls, like women now, but we've all been babysitters.
Yes.
And like, I don't know about you, but I babysit a guy who was like 9 or 10. And I just think there's something about babysitting a guy when they're on the cusp of like nearing puberty, that it can just be a bit like dodgy. So in this, it's basically that the guy... What? I mean, that's a legit issue.
It's so weird.
It was weird.
No, I've never had that. Thank God. Skate past that. Go.
So, I was also, when I'm just going to discuss this film, I'm just going to say from the top that I'm reading this from an article off Bloody Disgusting, and that came out only like a couple of days ago, actually, because like I said, it's a newish film. The trivia, there's not really much on it, so I'm not going to spoil too much of it. And what I will say comes out really early. Like, there's an obvious twist, and I knew that twist coming into it, so I will discuss that. But then stuff happens that I'm not going to discuss. But I would highly recommend that anyone watches this, because you would think, oh, we've all seen these kind of films before, but it takes on a twist that you would not have seen. And for that reason, because it's so hard to get a fresh horror film.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not going to go too much into it. And I will slightly do one spoiler, but if someone wants to watch this with absolutely no spoilers, then don't listen to me talk. Come back to the podcast, skip for the next, I don't know, 10 minutes, and then we'll be discussing our 100 film and wrap of doing our scary stories. And then, you know, so skip the next 10 minutes. And my last film. What? Oh, and Grace's next film. I'm like, no, Grace, we'll wrap it up there. We're done.
Tell your story.
Well, just skip 10 minutes and you'll still have good times with us. But if you just, I will just do a mini spoiler, but not the main spoiler. So basically, this film, I found it was like a Marmite film. People either, like, I finished it going, wow, that was brilliant. But some people were like, ugh, this could have been done so much better. And I'm like, ah, no. Like, it's going to split some people. But it's basically like, it's hard to imagine that it's all to do with the kid she's babysitting. He's only 12, but he's at the center of this, and he is depraved. And okay. So you might think that this film is another, what's that?
I said it, okay.
Oh yeah. So strap in. So you might think that this is just another home invasion movie, but with dark humor and young characters fighting back Home Alone style. So the initial part of the film, we open up with Olivia, Olivia DeJong, sorry, she's the actress. So she plays Ashley, and she's just like your typical teenager. She's about to move. She's on the phone to her mom, and she's like, I'm doing one last gig babysitting for this family. She's like, I wanted to be able to say goodbye to them. They're about to move. to go to Pennsylvania. And of course, like in Home Alone, they're in an extremely rich neighborhood. Like, there's just obscene wealth. Like, there's only the parents and their one son, but like, it's a mansion.
Okay.
That they live in. So she's out babysitting him, and he is upstairs with his friend. So it's Lucas, the boy she's babysitting, and he's up there with his friend Gab. And again, they're 12, and they're talking about how they've already smoked weed. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you're 12. You might only, in our eyes in Ireland, you're either still in primary school or just starting secondary school. Like, it's crazy what they're doing. So it's got me kind of fearing as to what young teenagers could be possibly getting into, because basically Luke wants to watch a scary film with Ashley so that she'll get scared and she'll go to him for comfort, where she's 17 in this and he's 12, about to turn 13, as he tells her. So she is like talking to the family and all that, and you can tell the parents are kind of fighting with each other, like it's but they get on or whatever. So it's a bit of a weird dynamic with the parents. There's money for like takeout. There's, the house is fucking huge again, as I would like to point out, because as someone who's just moved in and still like, well, not just moved in and getting stuff done to their house, I have a lot of house envy when I watch films.
Yes.
I don't know if you do this, Grace, but I just look at it and I'm like, fuckers with their mansion. So basically, as she's starting to babysit, they're putting on a horror film. Luke opens a bottle of champagne and he's like, oh, I've already had drink. And he's like necking it from the bottle and she's taking it off him. And it's already going weird. Like, he's acting strange around her. So yeah. So basically Ashley is led to believe that someone has broken into the house. There's all these like phone calls. It, like I said, it's like the opening to Scream. It's a lot of, there's a knock at the door. There's no one there. There was a pizza ordered, but they didn't order a pizza. Like, there's strange thing happening. And then like Ashley tries to get her phone to ring the police, but when Luke throws it at her, it goes into the fish tank. And so that's when I was kind of like, it seemed almost too convenient for Luke to have buggered up her phone.
Yeah.
But so then it's like I said, there's a round of scary hide and seek moments. Like, it is actually like they see someone coming around in, like, into the house. There's like a brick gets thrown through where it's like, you leave, you die. Garrett comes into the house. They think it's him taking the piss. But then when he sees this, he's like, fuck this, I'm out. And then he gets like taken out and you see blood and you're like, holy shit, there's someone there going to kill them. And Luke is like, I'm going to, like, I know where my parents' gun is. I'm going to get that. Because it's America, so there's a gun in every house. So he goes to get the gun. But see, Ashley is, she's almost made out to be kind of ditzy, but she notices, because she's looking at some photographs earlier on, and she notices that the masked intruder is wearing Luke's ski mask from a photograph she'd seen in the house. Okay. And then she's like, hang on. Like, there, and this is after about like a good, on edge, 10 plus minutes of them going around the house trying to get out of the rooms where the masked intruder has a shotgun and is going through the house. It turns out it was Garrett. Luke had asked him to do this and they were setting her up and they're like, we just wanted to scare you. And she's like, well, you bloody well achieved that. I'm shitting myself. What the hell do you think you're doing with guns and shotguns chasing me through the house? So obviously Luke was like, I'm going to protect you. Like, he's 12.
Yeah.
And he's, yeah, but 12 with a fucking gun and getting his friend to have a gun as well and making it look like as if the friend had died. So it's, like I said, it that's the only spoiler I'm going to have is that at the start, because like I said, they go through this within the first like 20, 25 minutes where this happens. And then the film takes a hard left. But she's like, you're fucking crazy. Why did you think that, you know? And I think Ashley starts to piece together that if Luke is the big man who protects her, God knows what he was going to do to Garrett as a masked intruder to try and protect her. But she's like, you're fucking crazy. And then it just spirals out of control where Luke goes insane.
Oh.
Yeah. So basically, we kind of get the vibe he's possessive of Ashley before things go south, because she's having a fight with her boyfriend because she's moving and he wants to just like spend some quality time with her before she goes. And she's like, oh, he might be in bed by like 11:30. So obviously she's planning on the boyfriend coming over, and Luke hears this, and that's when he grabs the drink. Like, he is pissed. He wants to, I think he imagined that basically like they'd sleep together on her.
Maybe it's a little bit more innocent than that.
That she's babysitting. No, 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 no. He was telling his friend at the start that he was going to hopefully like get with her.
Ew.
Yeah. 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 Be like, this is their mind. I'm like, I see, I don't know 12-year-old kids, like boys. And I don't know if now that's what they're hoping to get. That's why I'm hoping that it's just, if it was a 14, 15-year-old boy, I might believe that this was what they were hoping for in the long run. But like, to remember that he's 12, and like, there's parts of the film where Luke's voice is kind of breaking. It goes kind of squeaky. And you're,
but
like,
also, it could be the, just that absolute bravado that you have when you are that age and you go, I've totally had a cigarette.
Yeah. I've had alcohol before.
Yeah. So I remember starting school around that age and everybody being like, are you a frigid? And I was like, I didn't even know what it was. I'm not a frigid. And yeah. I was. And I know that means something very different in a different country. So yeah. Frigid is just kissing in Ireland.
Yeah. If you haven't kissed,
if you haven't kissed, you were a big dirty frigid. And yeah. I was. But with anybody knowing that, hell no. I was a cool.
It was so shameful. It was the same for me.
Snogged 30,000 people.
Yeah. Oh, it was. There's like, it's like a race when you're a teenager. You have to like, I know everyone's been through this, but I still just kind of like, we don't need this. Like, looking back on it, you're like, ugh, can't believe that's what like took over our lives as teenagers.
It's all a bit of crack as well.
It's not all, it's not like terrifying thing that's like hanging around your neck.
Yeah.
But basically like Ashley, she's kind of, so basically Luke is trying to plan to seduce her by like drinking the champagne, getting the pizza, he like lights some candles and she's like, ooh. But then he tries to kiss her before this all goes south. And she is like instantly recoils and she labels his mortifying advances as inappropriate. She's like, I'm 17 and you're 12. And he's like, I'm about to turn 13 soon. But like what causes some people to unplug is the next phase of Luke's scheme to win over Ashley with the break-in. And she calls, when she cops it all, she basically calls like Luke delusional and mental in front of Garrett. And that then causes Luke to snap. And I think what he had planned to happen, basically, even Garrett's not prepared for it. Yeah, like there's parts even where Garrett's like, I didn't plan for this. I was just meant to scare you. And I feel sorry for Garrett already, because he's definitely the friend who he thinks that this is his best friend, but you can see Luke is just like using him. And Luke is like, he's a psychopath in the making. In fact, he's a fully fledged psychopath just in a 12-year-old's
body.
Yeah. So this does seem like a home invasion style film. In the beginning, and then it's just basically Luke goes absolutely insane. Ashley is very smart character, like playing kind of final girl-esque. She's smart, she uses things around in the room to her advantage. She still tries to like they do this whole thing that they try and do like a truth or dare thing, and you're like, oh, it's so juvenile. But that's when you remember that these guys in it are like meant to be 12.
Yes.
So it's there are times when it's like you can see the innocence in him where he doesn't know what's going to happen with things. You remember like he's 12, but then when you like trade, especially at the last like 5 to 10 minutes of the film, when things are all rounding up and you see what planning Luke put into things, and then when he's like trying to clean up and do everything, like, it's like I said, I won't go into details, but it's like he had this planned out that even though it looks like as if he had to change plan things, like he obviously had a plan that he never told Garrett about.
But it's almost like those two girls, who, yes, like with Slender Man, and then they killed, they didn't kill, thank God.
Yeah.
But they had totally planned to kill their friend as an offering to Slender Man.
Yeah, so that they could get him to his palace.
Yep.
So it ends on like a kind of a cliffhanger bit. Where it could have led to a sequel, and I really hope they don't do a sequel, because I just think that you're like, ah, oh, look how it ended, it's brilliant. And then it just, boom, you're like, right, that's it. In an ideal world, they will leave it be, and it's been 5 years. And I'd say, considering COVID has like trashed anyone's ideas of like, it's made making films a lot harder, that maybe they may have planned to do something, and now they can't. And this film is actually done in Australia, and basically only Luke's parents are the only American actors in it. Everyone is Australian, but all playing American characters.
Oh, okay. I just want to ask you and say, is that the Australian one?
Yeah, but like it's filmed in Australia, but every character in it is American.
Okay.
And actually, the girl who plays Ashley and the guy who plays Garrett are the siblings from The Visit, where they go visit the grandparents.
Ooh.
Should have said that from the outset. Yes. But so yeah, it's like that. Obviously, The Visit was done before Better Watch Out. So like they were younger in it. So like they've obviously been in films together, but now they're obviously playing completely different characters. But yeah.
I'm definitely gonna watch that.
It's so good.
I'm gonna watch that today.
You don't know how it's gonna go.
I like that.
I totally think you should. I think anyone and everyone should watch this around Christmas time, because it is slightly like on a, it's the humor is, it said it was like a horror comedy, so that's why I love watching those kind of films. And like Krampus, where it's a horror comedy, there was more comedy in Krampus than in this. It's still very, it's dark. Yeah. Okay. Because you kind of think, you're like, how can a 12-year-old get away with this?
Mm.
But it's the way that he does it to overpower people. You're like, I could see how this would happen. Like the fights are legitimate, where you're like, how can a child be able to overpower? And it's a struggle. Like it's not just that I'm super strong as a 12-year-old. No, like it is realistic. And it's scary how realistic if a child has that psychopathic tendency.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
So from some very fucked up children in my one to your very fucked up child as well. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very smart. Like some people are probably like, the acting was done badly or should have been done better. I know. I honestly think that everyone in it played stellar in their roles. Like,
I'm really looking forward to watching that now.
Yeah. No, I 100% recommend it. And I'm glad I got to see it.
Brilliant. Delighted with life. So my next one, again, I saw on Shudder, and it's another one that I actually avoided. I think I'd seen it last year as an option, and I avoided it because I thought it was an anthology movie, and that Halloween movie with that kind of launched Terrifier has like scarred me for anthology movies. So I was like, I'm not watching this. But I am so glad that I did. It is. Again, I just thought it was going to be this kind of like real kind of movie, but actually it's really good. It has a couple of different stories in it. So although not an anthology, whereas it's a load of different stories, like independent of each other, there's two stories. Some of them are interwoven and some of them aren't, right? Now, one of my favorite things about doing this podcast and looking up different things about movies, like we look for trivia and stuff like that, is sometimes when the description of the movie, you read it and you go, that's not it at all.
Yeah.
But one of the descriptions that I saw was on IMDb, and either I 100% missed this, or I'm kind of missed the whole thing of the movie, or it's just not entirely true. So On IMDb, it has it as an interwoven stories that take place on Christmas Eve as told by one festive radio host. The family brings home more than a Christmas tree. A student documentary becomes a living nightmare. A Christmas spirit terrorizes. Santa slays evil. So everything there actually is quite a good snapshot of it. But I don't think there's stories that are told by the radio host. I think it's actually just that the radio host is doing a Christmas show, and he's just there every so often. He's part of the story. So unless I missed it where he was like, so I'm going to tell you another story, but I genuinely don't think it is, mainly because he's actually interlinked into the stories anyway. So it's really good. I definitely thought it was going to be this like anthology where it was going to be like somebody's story, somebody else's story, like one after the other, which it's not. Now, it's funny. I can't go into it too much because there actually is it. This is like The Mist, where you watch the movie and you go, oh yeah, that's a good movie. But the ending brings it from that's a good movie to, oh, did you see what they did there?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was like, nice. And there was a part of me that actually nearly didn't watch the ending because I was quite late with doing all research for this episode and came home after town this morning, still had half an hour to watch this movie. And I was almost going to kind of bluff my way through it. Thank God I didn't, because I would have missed it completely. And I would have been telling a story and anyone who had seen the movie would have been like, she has no idea what happens in the end. So you do have a couple of different stories. I can go into it a little bit. There's one family, they go to their old auntie, who's a bit of an old bitch, in her house, this big, huge house. They're like a well-to-do family, and they go to the house. And they're giving her like a Christmas visit. The kids don't want to be there at all. This story involves Krampus. So very cool, very different. Not like a very different story of Krampus. It's pretty much the same thing. But the cool thing is at one stage, there's an epic battle going on between Santa and Krampus. And you're like, ugh. And Santa cuts off one of Krampus's horns. And the cool thing was when it fell on the ground, it was like it shattered because it was ice. And I was like, ooh, that's really cool. It just looked really pretty. Then the next story is a bunch of kids. They are going to this school, and the girl who's gone off to meet the aunt was due to be going to the school as well, but she can't because she has to go to the aunt. They go to the school because two students had died the year before. So they're on Christmas Eve. So it's a bit of a, a sad time for the town. And it's a bit of a scary time as well because they don't know what happened. So they're going in there to make the documentary about it and they get locked in. So loads of things happen there. Then from that, you have this couple who go for a walk. They're trying to cut down their Christmas tree. It's a bit of a fractured dynamic. There's mum, dad, and a little boy. The little boy needs the use of an inhaler. You can kind of tell the dad, like, it's just a bit like, ugh, whatever. He then suggests that they go to this place where there's a sign saying, do not come here and cut down trees at your own peril. And he's like, fuck that. I'll do what I want. So they go in, they cut down the tree. The little boy goes missing. They can't find him for a while and they get something back. Now, if you've listened to our previous episodes, you may be able to decipher what that is from some of the kind of like folklore of Ireland. They get a changeling back. So that was really cool. I was like, ooh. So a whole thing ensues there. And then the next story is Santa Claus. And he's getting ready and Mrs. Claus is there. Mrs. Claus looks like she's after coming out of like somewhere where she's working at a Renaissance fair with her dress. It's gas. Santa Claus is like, it's almost like a dog the bounty hunter. and his wife were, like, not their physical appearance at all, but just their kind of demeanor. Do you know that kind of way? It was,
yeah,
it was all a bit bizarre. It was very like 80s motorcycle gang that I was getting off them. And basically his elves turn into zombies. And a whole story ensues there. So it's Santa's fight against evil there. And it's like, it's actually a delight. Genuinely. You're kind of, I really expected so little from this movie, and I'm so glad that I watched it, because I'd really like written it off completely.
Yeah.
Totally written it off. It's from 2015. It was written by James Nee, Sarah Larson, and Doug Taylor, and directed by Grant Harvey, Stephen Hoban, and Brett Sullivan. It stars William Shatner, and I didn't know that going into it, and when I saw the kind of the credits and it was like starring William Shatner, I was like, oh, okay. And he is the radio host, so you have his sultry tones going on. It's a bit of crack. It's one of those movies, go in knowing it's a bit of crack, do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
It's a bit silly. There's nuns involved. The story in the school, I think, kind of hints to the whole Virgin Mary and the birth and shite like that. And sure, you know, it gets a bit strange and raunchy.
I think actually originally when I was looking for the Krampus film last year, it was this. I was trying to find one with William Shatner in it, and I ended up coming across the other Krampus film that I'd watched. But yeah, that was originally the one I was looking for.
Yeah, it's on Shudder. Definitely go and have a watch of it. Even later on when kind of something happens with Krampus, I was like, oh, that's so cool. There were definitely bits that I went, oh, that was done really well, or I wouldn't have thought that would be the way that it was. And it was just like, it really was like, I hate saying this about a horror movie, but it was like, it was good, clean fun. Do you know that kind of way? It was just a good movie. It was a bit of crack. It's a Christmas horror. I never like kind of thought that we were going to get like these like earth shattering kind of movies, but like on the front of it, it says an instant classic. And for me, I was like, 100%, that's what it is. The cool thing about it as well is that this is based in a town called Bailey Downs. Now, people who are horror fanatics and horror fans will recognize that name. And I definitely recognize it, but I didn't know where it was from. And this is the same town as Ginger Snaps. So I thought it was really cool. I kind of did a nod to that. And it's also the name of the suburb where Alison Clone in Orphan Black, which is a TV series that I haven't seen, takes place. And during the credits for this movie, it says no elves were harmed in the making of this film. So it's just a bit, like, I love it. I thought it was really good. I really wasn't looking forward to watching it. I kind of just did it because I was like, right, okay, I need to see something. Funnily enough, actually, it gets 5.9 on IMDb, but it gets a really good rating on Shudder. Like, it gets 4 out of the 5 skulls on Shudder.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just over an hour and a half, so it's a lovely length as well. You're not going too mad. Just everything about it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I'm almost going back into loving hour and a half horror movies.
Yeah.
They're just all I want to see. So, no, I will totally give that watch, because that is, now that I know where it is, I can get it, because that was my problem. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, yeah. And like I can see somebody gave a review here. I liked the ending way more than any other part. Okay, the poster was amazing, but the 4 stories that don't go together, the shoddy acting and the script. So now, in fairness, and then somebody else gave it 5 and it was like pretty entertaining, fun trio of shorts, plus it's got Shatner. So cheesy, so good.
Mm.
So that's exactly, you know, and it's not exactly that they're not all independent of each other. 2 and 2 interlock and yeah. 2 don't. But it, somebody put it perfectly here. So they said 2 days ago, Sarevi Demon or Damien on Shudder. A fun watch, pretty solid, which is exactly what I'd say it is.
Mm.
Yeah, so 100%. Give it a bit of a watch. I think the most surprising thing I've had all year is every time I've gone into a movie that has something to do with zombies and I've gone, oh, I don't want to watch this, they've actually been some of my top movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, on Shudder, if you have time later on, you're doing something, put it on. It's great. Like, go into it knowing it's really cheesy.
Yes, 100%.
So, Emer, what is your Christmas story?
So, I don't know about you, but it's hard to find Christmas ghost stories. And so I come across, if anyone else is curious, back in 2013, The Guardian, which is a British newspaper, had done kind of 5 days over the Christmas period, a ghost story every day.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So I came across one of them, which was written up on, it was released out on Christmas Eve, and it was called Dark Christmas by Jeanette Winterson. So it is a bit of a ramble, so sit back, relax, and let me tell you a Christmas ghost story.
I'm excited.
Okay, so it is Dark Christmas by Jeanette Winterson. We had borrowed the house from a friend none of us seemed to know. Already off to a good start, I think. High fallen house stood on an eminence overlooking the sea. It was a square Victorian gentleman's residence. The large bay windows looked down through the pines towards the shore. Six stone steps led the visitor up to the double front door, where a Gothic bell pull released a loud, mournful clang deep into the distance of the house. Laurel lined the drive. The stable block was disused. The wall garden had been locked up in 1914 when the gardeners went to war. Only one had returned. I had been warned that the high brick wall enclosing the garden was unsafe. As I passed it slowly in the car, I saw a faded notice falling off the paint-peeled door, "Do not enter." I was the first to arrive. My friends were following by train and I was to collect them the next day and we would settle down to Christmas. I had driven from Bristol and I was tired. There was a Christmas tree roped on top of my 4x4 and a trunk load of provisions. We were not near any town, but the housekeeper had left stacked wood to build a fire and I had brought a shepherd's pie and a bottle of Rioja for my first night. The kitchen was cheerful enough once I had got the fire going and the radio playing while I unpacked our festive supplies. I checked my phone, no signal. Still, I knew the time of the train tomorrow and it was a relief to feel that the world had gone away. I put my food in the oven to heat up, poured a glass of wine and went upstairs to find myself a bedroom. The first landing had three bedrooms leading off. Each had a moth-eaten rug, a metal bed and a mahogany chest of drawers. At the far end of the landing was a second set of stairs up to the attic floor. I'm not romantic about maids' rooms or nurseries, and there was something about the second set of stairs that made me hesitate. The landing was bright in the sudden way of late sun on a winter's afternoon, yet the light ended abruptly at the foot of the stairs, as though it couldn't go any farther. I didn't want to be near that set of stairs, so I chose the room at the front of the house. As I went to bring my bag, the house bell started to ring, its jerky metallic hammer sounding somewhere in the guts of the house. I was surprised but not alarmed. I had expected the housekeeper. I opened the door, but there was no one there. I went down the steps and looked around, and I admit I was frightened. The night was clear and soundless. There was no car in the distance, no footsteps walking away. Determined to conquer my fear, I walked around a little. Then turning back to the house, I saw it. The bell wire rang along the side of the house under a sheltering gutter. Perhaps 30 or 40 bats were dangling upside down on the vibrating wire. The same number swooped and swerved in a dark mass. Obviously, their movement on the wire had set off the bell. I like bats, clever bats. Good, now for supper. I ate and I drank. I wondered why love is so hard and life is so short. I went to bed. The room was warmer now and I was ready to sleep. The sound of the sea ebbed into the flow of my dreams. I woke up from a dead sleep in the dead darkness to hear what? What can I hear? It sounded like a bell bearing on or a marble rolling on the bare floor above my head. It rolled hard and then hit the wall. Then it rolled again in the other direction. This might not have mattered except that the other direction was upwards. Things that come loose and roll downwards, but they cannot come loose and roll upwards unless someone was in the house. That thought was so unwelcome, I dismissed it along with the law of gravity. Whatever was rolling over my head must be a natural dislodging. The house was drafty and unused. The attics were under the eaves where any kind of weather might get in. Weather or an animal. Remember the bats. I pulled the cover up to my eyebrows and pretended not to listen. But there it was again, hard, on hit, on pause, on row. I waited for sleep, waiting for daylight. We are lucky, even the worst of us, because daylight comes. It was a brooding day of the 21st of December, the shortest day of the year. Coffee, coat on, car keys. Shouldn't I just check the attic? The second set of stairs was a narrow. It was for the servant staircase. It led to a path and plaster corridor, barely shoulder width wide. I started coughing. Breathing was difficulty. Damp had dropped the plaster in thick, crumbling heaps on the floorboards. As below, there were three doors. Two were closed. But the door to the room above my room was ajar, and I made myself go forward. The room was under the eaves, as I had guessed. The floor was rough. There was no bed, only a washcloth and a clothes rail. What surprised me, though, was the nativity scene in the corner. Standing about 2 feet tall, it was more like a doll's house than a Christmas decoration. Inside the open front stable stood the animals, the shepherds, the crib, Joseph. Above the roof on a bit of wire was a battered star. It was old, handmade in a workmanlike but not craftsmanlike sort of way. The paint is snow now, rubbed and faded like pigments of time. I thought I would carry it downstairs and put it by our Christmas tree. It must have been made for the children when there were children here. I stuffed my pockets with the figures and animals and left quickly, leaving the door open. I had to set off for the station. Stephen and Susie would help me with the rest later. As soon as I was out of the house, my lungs felt clear again. It must have been the plaster dust. The drive to the station was along the coast road, lonely and unyielding. The road turned in a series of blind bends and tight corners. I met no one and I saw no one. Gold circled over the sea. The station itself was a simple shelter along a single track. There were no information boards. I checked my phone and again, no signal. At last, the train appeared distantly down the track. I was excited. Memories of visiting my father as a child when he was stationed at his RAF base gave me a rush of pleasure whenever I travelled by train to come or meet someone. The train slowed and halted. The guard stood down for a moment. I watched the doors. It wasn't a big train, this branch line of trains, but none of the doors had opened. I waved at the guard who came over. I said I'm meeting my friends. He shook his head and said the train is empty. Next stop is the end of the line. I was confused. Had they got off at an earlier stop? I described them. The guard shook his head and said, I noticed strangers. They would have boarded at Carlisle. Asked me where to get off. They always do that. Is there another train before tomorrow? And he said, there's one a day and that's your lot. And more than anybody needs in a place like this. Where are you staying? I said, High Fallen House. Do you know it? Oh, he said, we all know it. He looked as if he was about to say something else, but instead he blew his whistle. The empty train pulled away, leaving me staring down a long track, watching the red lights like a warning. I need to get signal on my phone. I drove on past the station, following the steep hill, hoping some height would connect me to the rest of the world. At the top of the hill, I stopped the car and got out, pulling up the collar of my coat. The first snow hit my face with insect insistence, sharp and spiteful, like little bites. I looked out across the whitening bay. That must be High Fallen House. But what's that? Two figures walking on the beach. Is it Stephen and Susie? Had they driven here after all? Then as I strained my eyes against the deceit of distance, I realized that the second figure was much smaller than the first, and they were walking purposely towards the house. When I arrived back, it was nearly dark. I put on the lights, blew the fire into a blaze. There was no sign of the mysterious couple I'd seen from the hill. Perhaps it had been the housekeeper and her daughter come to make sure that everything was all right. I had a telephone number for Miss Wormwood, but without a signal, I could not call her. The snow was thickening in windy swirls. Relax, I have whiskey. I leaned on the warm kitchen range with my whiskey in my hand. The wooden figures I had brought down from the attic were lying on the kitchen table. I should go up and get the stable. I don't want to. I bounded up the first set of stairs, using energy to force out unease. At my bedroom, I put on the light. That felt better. The second set of stairs stood in the shadow at the end of a long landing. I felt that the construction was back in my lungs. Why am I holding onto the handrail like an old man? I could see that the only light in the attic was at the top of the stairs. I found the round brown bakelite switch. I flicked down onto the switch. A single bulb was lit up reluctantly. The room was straight ahead. The door was closed, but hadn't I left it open? I turned the handle and stood in the doorway, the room dimly lit by the light from the stairs, with the washstand, the nativity set, and the clothes rail. On the clothes rail was a child's dress. I hadn't noticed that before. I suppose, though, I'd been in a hurry. Pushing aside my misgivings, I went in purposely and bent down to pick up the wooden nativity set. It was heavy, and I had just got it secure in my arms when the light in the landing went out. I thought, hello, is there anyone there?
there was someone breathing like they can barely breathe, not faint, struggling for breath. I mustn't turn around because of whoever or whatever it is behind me. I stood still for a minute, steadying my nerves. Then I shuffled forward towards the edges of the light coming up from downstairs. At the doorway, I heard a step behind me, lost my balance and put my hand out to steady myself. My hand gripped something wet, the clothes rail. It must be the dress. My heart was overbreathing. Don't panic. Hit the light switch. But there was bad wiring, strange house, darkness, and I'm alone. But you're not alone, are you? Back in the kitchen with whiskey, Radio 4, and pasta boiling, I examined the dress. It was for a small child and it was hand-knitted. The wool was smelly and sopping. I washed it out and left it hanging over the sink to drip. I guess there must be a hole in the roof and the dress had been soaking up the rain for a long time. I ate my supper, tried to read, told myself it had been nothing at all. It was only 8 p.m. and I didn't want to go to bed, though the snow outside was like a quilt. I decided to arrange the nativity. Donkey, sheep, camels, wise men, shepherd, star, and Joseph. The crib was there, but it was empty. There was no Christ child, and there was no Mary. Had I dropped them in the dark room, I hadn't heard anything fall, and these wooden figures were 6 inches tall. Joseph was wearing a woolen tunic, but his wooden legs had painted putties. I pulled off the tunic. Underneath wooden Joseph wore a painted uniform from the First World War. When I turned him around, I saw there was a gash in his back like a stab wound. Then my phone beeped. I dropped Joseph, grabbed my phone. It was a message from Susie saying, trying to call you, leave tomorrow. I pressed call, but got nothing. I tried to send another text, but got nothing. But what did it matter? Suddenly I felt relief and calm. They had been delayed. That was all. Tomorrow they would be here. I sat down again with the nativity. Perhaps the missing figures were inside. I put in my hand, my fingers closed around a metal object. It was a small iron key with a hoop top. Maybe it was the key to the attic door. Outside, snow had fallen, snow on snow. The sky had cleared, the moon sped above the sea. I'd gone to bed and I was in a deep sleep when I heard clearly, above me, footsteps, pacing, down the hall, hesitate, turn, return. I lay in bed, eyes staring blindly at the blind ceiling. Why do we even open our eyes when we can't see anything? What was there to see? I don't believe in ghosts. I wanted to put on the light, but what if the light didn't come on? Why would it be worse to be in the darkness I had not chosen than the darkness I was choosing? But it would be worse. I sat up in bed and pulled back the curtain a little. The moon had been so bright tonight, surely there would be light. There was light outside the house, hand in hand, stood in the still and silent figures of a mother and child. I did not sleep again till daylight. And when I slept and woke again, it was almost midday and already the light was lowering. Hurrying to get coffee, I saw that the dress had gone. I had left it dripping over the sink and it was gone. So I thought, get out of the house. I set off for the station. There was an air frost that had coated the trees in glittering white. It was beautiful and deathly. The world held in ice. On the road, there were no car tracks, no noise, but the roar and drop of the sea. I moved slowly and saw no one. In the white, unmoving landscape, I wondered if there was anyone else left alive. At the station, I waited. I waited some time past until the train whistled on the track. The train stopped. The guard got down, saw me, shook his head, said, "There's no one, no one at all." I thought I would cry. I took out my mute phone. I flashed up the message, "Trying to call you, leave tomorrow." The guard looked at it and said, "Happen, it's you who should be leaving," he said. "There's no more trains past Carlisle now till the 27th. Tomorrow was the last, and that's been cancelled due to the weather." I wrote down a number and gave it to the guard. "Will you phone my friends and tell them I'm on my way home?" On the slow journey back to High Fallen House, I filled my mind with my departure. It would be slow and dangerous to travel at night, but I could not consider another night alone, or not alone. All I had to do was manage 40 miles to Inchbarn. There was a pub and a guest house, a remote but normal life. The text kept playing in my head. Had it really meant to say I should leave and why? Because Susie and Stephen couldn't come? Was it weather or illness? It was all a guessing game. The fact is, I have to go. The house seemed subdued when I returned. I left the lights on and went straight upstairs to pack my bag. At once I saw that the light to the attic was on. I paused, breathed. Of course it's on. I never switched it off. That proves it's a wiring fault, so I must tell the housekeeper. With my bag packed, I threw the food into a box and put everything in the back of the car. I had the whiskey in the front, a blanket I stole from the bed, and made a hot water bottle just in case. It was 5 o'clock. At worst, I'd be in Inchbarn for 9 p.m. I got in the car and turned the key. The radio came on for a second, died, and as the ignition clicked and clicked, I knew that the battery was flat. 2 hours ago at the station, the car had started first time. Even if I'd left the lights on, but I hadn't left the lights on. A cold panic hit me and I took a swig of the whiskey. I couldn't sleep in the car all night. I would die. And I don't want to die. Back in the house, I wondered what I was going to do all night. I must not fall asleep. I noticed some old books and volumes when I had explored downstairs yesterday. Assorted dusty adventure stories and tales of the empire. As I sorted through them, I came across a faded velvet photo album. In the cold, deserted sitting room, I began to discover the past. High Fallen House in 1910. The women in long skirts with miraculous waists. The men in shooting tweeds. The stable boys in waistcoats. The gardening boys wearing flat caps. The maids in starched aprons. And here they are again in the Sunday best, a wedding photograph. Joseph and Mary Locke, 1912. He was a gardener, she was a maid. In the back of the album, loose and unsorted, were further photographs and newspaper cuttings of 1914, the men in uniform, and there was Joseph. I took the album back into the kitchen and put it next to my wooden soldier. I had on my coat and scarf. I propped myself up in two chairs by the wooden fired range and dozed and waited and waited and dozed. It was perhaps 2 o'clock when I heard a child crying. Not a child who scraped his knee or lost a toy, but an abandoned child. A child whose own voice is his last hold on life. A child who cries and knows that no one will come. The sound was not above me. It was above the above me. I knew where the sound was coming from. I put my hands over my ears and my head between my knees. I could not shut out the sound. A locked up child, a hungry child, a child who was cold, wet and frightened. Twice I got up and went to the door. Twice I sat down again. The crying stopped. Silence. A dreadful silence. I raised my head. Footsteps were coming down the stairs, not 1 foot in front of the other, but 1 foot dragging slightly, then joining the other, steadying, stepping again. At the bottom of the stairs, the footsteps paused. Then they did what I knew they would do with all the terror in my body. The footsteps came towards the kitchen door. Whatever was out there was standing 12 feet away on the other side of the door. I stood behind the table and picked up a knife. The door swung open with a violent force that rammed the brass doorknob into the plaster of the wall. Wind and snow blew into the kitchen, whirling up the photographs and cuttings on the table. I saw that the front door itself was wide open, the entrance hall like a wind tunnel. Holding the knife, I went forward into the hall to shut the door. The pendant metal lantern that hung from the ceiling was swinging wildly on its long chain. A sudden gust lurched it forward like a child's swing pushed too high. It fell back at the force against the semi-circular fanlight above the door. The fanlight shattered and fell around my shoulders in shards of sharp rain. Flicker, buzz, darkness. The house lights were out. No wind now, no cries. Silence again. Glass hit in the snow-lit hall. I walked out of the front door and into the night. At the drive, I turned left and saw them, the mother and child. The mother was wearing the woolen dress. She had no shoes. She held up her arms piteously to her mother, who stood like stone. I ran forward and grabbed the child in my arms. There was no child. I had fallen face down in the snow. Help me, but that's not my voice. I'm on my feet again. The mother's ahead of me. I follow her. She's going towards the walled garden. She seems to pass through the door, leaving me at the other side. Do not enter. I tried the rusty hoop handle. It broke off, taking a piece of the door with it. I kicked the door open. It fell off its hinges. The ruined and abandoned garden lay before me. A walled garden of 1 acre used to feed 20 people, but that was a long time ago. There were footprints in the snow. I followed them. They led me to the bothy, its roof patched with corrugated iron. There was no door, but inside seemed dry and sound. There was a tear-off calendar on the wall, which read the 22nd of December 1916. I put my hand in my pocket and realized that the key from the Nativity was there. At the same time, I heard a chair scrape on the floor in the room beyond. I had no fear anymore. As the body first shivers and then numbs with cold, my feelings were frozen. I was moving through the shadows as one who dreams. In the room beyond, there was a low fire lit in the tiny tin fireplace. On either side of the fire sat the mother and child. The child was absorbed playing with the marble. Her bare feet blew, but she did not seem to feel the cold any more than I did. Are we dead then? The mother with the shawl over her head looked at me with deep expressionless eyes. I recognized her. It was Mary Locke. She nodded at me, or not at me, at some other me in some other time, I do not know. Her gaze went to a tall cupboard. I knew that my key fitted this cupboard and that I must open it. I did so. A dusty uniform fell out, crumpling like a puppet. The uniform was not quite empty of its occupant. The back of the faded wool jacket had a long slash where lungs would have been. I looked up at the knife in my hand. Open the door. Are you in there? Open the door. I woke to a blinding white. Where am I? Something's rocking. It's the car. I'm in my car. A heavy glove was brushing off the snow. I sat up, found my keys, pressed the unlock button. It was morning. Outside was the guard from the train and a woman who announced herself as Miss Wormwood. Fine mess you've made here, she said. We went to the kitchen. I was shivering so much that Miss Wormwood relented and began making coffee. Alfie fetched me, she said, after he spoke to your friends. There's a body, I said, in the walled garden. Is that where it is, says Miss Wormwood. At Christmas 1914, Joseph Locke had gone to war. Before he left for Flanders, he had made a nativity scene for his little girl. When he came back in 1916, he had been gassed. They had heard him climbing the stairs, gasping for breath through froth-corrupted lungs. His mind had gone, they said. At night in the attic where he slept with his wife and child, he leaned vacantly against the wall, rolling the child's marble up and down, down and up, pacing, pacing, pacing. One night, just before Christmas, he strangled his wife and daughter. He left them for dead in bed and went out, but his wife was not dead. She followed him. In the morning, they found her sitting by the nativity, her dress dark with blood, his finger marks livid at her throat. She was singing a lullaby and pushing the point of the knife into the back of the wooden figure. Joseph was never found. Are you going to call the police? I said. What for? Miss Wormwood said. Let the dead bury the dead. Alfie, the guard, went out to see my car. It started first time. The exhaust blew in the white air. I left them clearing up and was about to set off when I remembered I'd left my radio in the kitchen. I went back inside. The kitchen was empty. I could hear two of them up in the attic. I picked up the radio. The nativity was on the table as I had left it, but it wasn't as I had left it. Joseph was there and the animals and the shepherds and the worn out star. And in the center was a crib. Next to the crib were wooden figures of a mother and child. So that's it.
Creepy.
Yes, yes. So there are four other tales, because like I said, the Guardian had done five tales. So all I did was I googled Guardian Christmas stories, and you will be able to get and read between one to the other.
Amazing. And I actually think this episode is sponsored by the Guardian, because I too got my next thing from the Guardian. So it was written by J. Oliver Conroy and 2019, and the seven most terrifying Christmas traditions around the world. So there are definitely a couple of the ones that we looked at last year. So we have Krampus, which I won't go into too much, because I think he's kind of our mainstream one.
Yeah.
So we all know about him. We spoke about, I think you looked at Frau Percha last year, which is the one who Ross was over earlier, and I was telling him about some of these. And she was the one who, if you were bad, she would like open you up and stuff you with straw.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was very funny what they said here. It's sort of like Santa bringing coal, but with disembowelment instead. Now, the next one I hadn't heard of, Mary Lowd. So it's Wales. And they say, imagine it's New Year's Eve. You're a small Welsh child. You hear a knock at the door. You open it. Looming over you is a creature with a horse's skull, wearing a long billowing cloak and tailed by people chanting. In the horse's eye cavities are fake eyeballs. Its mouth is slightly ajar. You're paralyzed in terror. As you wet yourself in fear, adults around you wish each other Happy New Year.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I know this is another one that we looked at last year, which was Gorilla and the Yule Cat in Iceland. I think you had actually looked at them, this one in particular, last year. But the one thing that I hadn't seen, and either I just forgot about it, but... So Gorilla also has a variety of companions along with the Yule Cat. But myself and Ross had a good laugh at this, including the Yule Lads, which are her 13 unruly troll children / large adult sons. So we said we could imagine like a bunch of lads going out.
We're the Yule Lads.
The Yule Lads, you know. Going for a few pints before 8 o'clock.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely before 8 o'clock now.
Yeah. Then the next one is a kind of tale from Greece, Bulgaria, Serbia, and Turkey. I can't say what it is. It's Kali Kant Zari, Calicanzari, are goblins who spend most of the year underground trying to bring about the apocalypse. During Advent, they come out onto the human territory to cause mischief and evil. They are sometimes described as black furry creatures with tusks and horns. They're usually male and grotesquely well endowed.
Okay.
Which I just thought was hilarious.
Feel the need to say that then.
Exactly. So we'll put the link to both of those stories in our show notes if you want to go and have a look at them. And there's a couple of different other festive kind of terrifying traditions as a part of that article, but we had looked at them last year. So I just thought the Yule Lads was worth a mention. Definitely. Yeah.
Like some like hoodie gang.
Yeah. So this week's 100 movie is one that is one of Emer's. So I'm going to let you take it away, Emer, and tell us all about it.
So we have one of the more classic films ever. It's The Shining. So haunted by a persistent writer's block, the aspiring author and recovering alcoholic Jack Torrance drags his wife Wendy and his gifted son Danny up the snow-capped Colorado secluded Overlook Hotel after taking up a job as an off-season caretaker. As the cavernous hotel shuts down for the season, the manager gives Jack a grand tour and the facilities chef, the aging Mr. Halloran, has a fascinating chat with Danny about a rare psychic gift called The Shining, making sure to warn him about the hotel's abandoned rooms and in particular the off-limits room 237. However, instead of overcoming the dismal creative rut, little by little, Jack starts losing his mind, trapped in an unforgiving environment of seemingly endless snowstorms and a gargantuan silent prison riddled with strange occurrences and eerie visions. Now the incessant voices inside Jack's head demand a sacrifice. Is Jack capable of murder?
I love this movie.
Yeah, never ever gets old. It's just such a great film. And even though it's like it's completely different to the book in a sense of how it ends, you could still enjoy both reading it and watching the film. I think you could, it's not that one takes away from the other. I think they're both brilliant side by side.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
And it is that whole you are alone.
Yeah.
No one is there to help you. Like, you've just got a two-way radio to speak to somebody and that's it.
Yeah. I love this movie. I equally love as much as this movie, the recut version of the trailer for this movie, which makes it out to be a really nice family movie. And it's climbing up on Salisbury Hill. And my heart goes boom, boom, boom. Beautiful.
That's a beautiful rendition, Grace.
Thank you. As you can tell, I know all of the words. All of them.
All of them.
I love this movie. I know it's one of your favorites as well.
It's just, but like, I suppose it was like one of my first films with Jack Nicholson, watching him in it. And then as I got older, it was kind of more of a realization that it's just a lot of films is just Jack Nicholson being Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Yeah. Yeah.
But this film really works for him in that sense.
Yes, it really does. It really, really does. So thank you for joining us for our festive episode. It kind of feels really weird because I can't get my head around the fact that it's like Christmas in a couple of days.
I know. Yeah. It's fierce mild out. It's really hard just to tell.
It's very strange. I think we've all been really busy as well. So we just haven't had a chance to sit down and go, oh, it is next week.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of nice. It will just be like, oh, we can chill. We can relax now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to take a wee break over Christmas. We won't have an episode out over the next 2 weeks, but we are going to re-release two of our favorite episodes. We love every episode equally, but these are ones that we just chose as one of the ones that we had the most fun either recording or researching. So keep your ears peeled and your eyes peeled for those. I may have one or two other little things to upload. Possibly one. Really, I'm not putting too much
No, and I will be doing something, hopefully, if I can, over the Christmas period on Instagram.
Yes. So make sure to follow us on Instagram on Because You're Home with an underscore in between each word.
And you can listen to us on most podcast platforms. And if you listen to us on Apple, we would love a rate and review. And I would just like to say now on Spotify, you can rate podcasts. So if people would listen to us on Spotify, then be sure to give us any rating. Would love a 5-star, but any sort of a rating. And actually, yeah, no, feck it. All 5 stars, people.
All five stars.
We'll accept no less. And but if you listen to us on any other podcast platform, just tell a friend if you like what you hear. Let's get people on board with us.
Yes, I know the Spotify hasn't updated on everybody's account because it hasn't updated on mine, and I saw somebody else mention that as well. Keep an eye out. Once it does update in your Spotify account, give us an ale or eating. We'd love it.
That'd be your Christmas present to us.
And we will talk to you in the new year, even though we will be in your ears.
Yeah.
Just recapping a few things over the next couple of days. And happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, y'all.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
So I'm very proud of that opening. So I won't be talking for the rest of the episode. I've done my job.
I'm done. I'm out. Mic drop.
All I can think of. She was a girl,
yes.
He was a boy. Could I make it any more obvious?
He fights at war, she sits alone. Rocking the baby, she's all alone.